Hello, and welcome to Silver Threads, a weekly program of information on how you can make your senior year shine. I'm Kathy Van Skoik. I recently had the opportunity to attend, as an audience member, the filming of WXXI's Second Opinion program on the topic of hospital delirium. It's a topic that I reported on several years ago, and I'm pleased to be able to share with you more current information on it, as well as the related issue of sundowning. The statistics on these conditions are alarming, being far more prevalent than previously believed or identified. Today's articles begin with Harvard Health Publications, When Patients Suddenly Become Confused. Hospital delirium is common and often goes unrecognized, updated March 18, 2016, followed by NPR's Sundowning, Why Hospital Staffs Dread Nightfall and How to Help Seniors Avoid It, from November 2015. And from Harvard Health Publication, when Mary, aged 84, was hospitalized for a hip replacement, everything went well until a complication landed her in the intensive care unit, or ICU, and she began to behave oddly. She thought she was in a hotel, reported that a cartoon character had died in the bed next to hers, struggled at night to escape non-existent intruders, and complained that the staff was ignoring the rats infesting her room. After a psychiatric consult, Mary was given medication to calm her and help her sleep, and eventually she started acting more like her old self. We stayed with her day and night, and the delirium cleared once she was back in a regular room. Now we can laugh about it, but she remembers little about those weeks, her daughter-in-law said. During illness, hospitalization, or recovery from surgery or stroke, many people experience delirium, a rapidly developing and severe confusion accompanied by altered consciousness and an inability to focus. In the most common complication of hospitalization among people age 65 and over, 20% of those admitted to hospitals, up to 60% of those who have certain surgeries, and almost 80% of those treated in ICUs develop delirium. When hospital delirium isn't recognized, it can hinder recovery. Prolonged delirium is associated with poor long-term outcomes, mental and physical, and higher mortality rate. Fortunately, there are ways to avoid delirium or minimize its impact. How delirium develops. Anything that interrupts normal brain function can cause delirium. Inflammation or toxic substances can interfere with brain function, for example, by disturbing the neurotransmitters that communicate between nerve cells. Though the causes of delirium are complex, one major pathway involves the neurotransmitter acetylcholine. If blood sugar levels fall too low or the brain doesn't receive enough oxygen, acetylcholine levels plummet. Many anticholinergic medications, drugs that reduce the effect of acetylcholine, including the blood pressure drug nifedipine, Adalat, Procardia, and others, and the incontinence medication Tolturidine or Detrol, can trigger delirium as a side effect. Also, older people who make less acetylcholine than the young, so they're at greater risk for delirium, especially those who already have dementia or other neurological disorders. In vulnerable individuals, delirium can be induced by infection, insufficient food and drink, trauma such as surgery or injury, uncontrolled pain, medications that most people tolerate well, or simply the unfamiliar surroundings of a hospital. Delirium versus dementia. Although people who have dementia are more likely to develop delirium when hospitalized, the two conditions are different. Delirium usually arises rapidly, fluctuates in severity, involves changes in consciousness and attention, and clears up within days or weeks. Dementia comes on slowly. It is progressive and usually permanent and doesn't alter consciousness or attention unless it is severe. We often think of people in a state of delirium as agitated, noisy, hallucinating, and possibly belligerent. This condition, called hyperactive delirium, occurs frequently during withdrawal from psychoactive drugs, but occurs relatively rarely in people who, like Mary, have delirium related to illness or hospitalization. Far more common is hypoactive delirium, in which the patient may be equally disoriented but is withdrawn, drowsy, or difficult to wake. For example, a Vanderbilt University study found that all but 2 of 25 emergency room patients aged 65 and over who were diagnosed with hospital delirium, out of 303 surveyed, had the hypoactive type. Some patients fluctuate between the two states. Because people with hypoactive delirium aren't disruptive, their condition may go unnoticed unless physicians screen for it. In the Vanderbilt study, 9 of 25 patients identified with standard screening tool had not been diagnosed by emergency room physicians. Of the 16 out of 25 admitted to the hospital, only 1 was diagnosed by a hospital physician at the time of admission. Recognizing delirium is critical to a successful outcome for older patients. Research indicates that 1 month after hip replacement or cardiac surgery, patients who develop hospital delirium are twice as likely as those who don't to show a decline in their ability to perform normal activities of daily living. When patients with delirium are transferred from the hospital to a nursing facility, for example, to rehabilitation, whether their delirium clears has a profound impact on their functional recovery. A widely used screening tool is the confusion assessment method. It prompts health professionals to look for several symptoms: a sudden change in mental status, difficulty focusing during conversation, rambling, disorganized or illogical thoughts, altered consciousness, anything from hyper-alert to unarousable, disorientation regarding time or place, impaired memory, seeing or hearing things that aren't there, increased motor activity such as restlessness, picking at clothes or tapping fingers, or decreased motor activity such as staring into space or moving very slowly, and disturbed sleep, such as insomnia or daytime sleepiness. Delirium is diagnosed if the symptoms fluctuate or appear suddenly and involve inattention, as well as altered consciousness or trouble thinking. At present, there's no blood test for delirium, but researchers at Harvard Medical School are looking for possible biomarkers. What to do? Delirium is a medical emergency until proven otherwise, says Dr. Angela Botts, a geriatric specialist at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. The first step in treatment is identifying the underlying cause or causes. This may involve one or more of the following: blood tests to detect anemia, abnormal blood sugar, nutritional deficiency, imbalance in blood levels of sodium, potassium, and other electrolytes, or disturbance of thyroid, liver, or kidney function. Urine tests to screen for urinary tract infection, dehydration, or toxic substances, including high levels of sedatives or painkillers, and chest X-ray to diagnose pneumonia or heart failure. Also, neurological assessment to look for signs of stroke or another neurological disorder. If the exam is abnormal, a CT scan or MRI of the head may be ordered, and psychiatric consult to help distinguish delirium from dementia or depression and to assess pain control and sleep patterns. There are no drugs specifically for delirium. In fact, less medication is often better than more, since adverse reactions to drugs are a common cause of delirium. Still, medications may be needed: analgesics for pain control, antibiotics to treat infection, sleeping pills to reestablish a normal sleep-wake cycle, and antipsychotic medications to eliminate hallucinations or other frightening symptoms of hyperactive delirium. The hospital staff can help shorten delirium by talking to patients and reorienting them, reminding them that they are in the hospital and what the date and the time is. It's also important to get patients out of bed or provide other physical activity and to make it easier for them to sleep at night. Family members can help by being a familiar and reassuring presence and encouraging physical activity and social interaction. This intervention can benefit even intensive care patients on mechanical ventilation. The length of delirium was halved when their sedatives were adjusted to keep them awake during the day and able to participate in physical therapy. Efforts at prevention. In about 40% of cases, delirium is preventable. At Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston and other hospitals, prevention is coordinated by the Hospital Elder Life Program, or HELP. Designed by Harvard School of Medicine Dr. Sharon Inouye and colleagues at Yale University School of Medicine. The program begins at admission to the hospital with screening for delirium risk factors, including cognitive impairment, sleep deprivation, immobility, dehydration, and vision or hearing impairment. Nurse specialists and volunteers continue to address these risks throughout the patient's stay. In an early clinical trial, the HELP program reduced from 26% to 8% the proportion of patients whose mental status declined during hospitalization. More recently, the program's developers demonstrated that families can play an important role in various aspects of the program, especially by providing memory cues, helping to orient patients, stimulating them with conversation, and making sure glasses and hearing aids are available. How families can help avoid or limit hospital delirium. An engaged and attentive family member can help prevent delirium and advocate for the patient so they receive optimal care, said Dr. Edwards Morcantonio, associate professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. Family members are often the only ones who see a loved one through the entire journey, from primary care to hospitalization to rehabilitation. Here are some of the ways the family can help avoid or limit delirium. Consult with a geriatric specialist. Not all surgeons are familiar with delirium. When an older person is considering hip replacement or other elective surgery or any procedure requiring anesthesia or sedation, advice from a geriatrician can facilitate planning for medication, pain control, post-operative mobility, and sleep support. Bring a full medication list to any new health professional. Many drugs that act on the brain can cause delirium, including narcotic painkillers, sedatives, particularly benzodiazepines, stimulants, sleeping pills, antidepressants, Parkinson's disease medications, and antipsychotics. Other medications that may cause delirium are corticosteroids, cimetidine, digoxin, and muscle relaxants. Besides nifedipine and tolteridine, mentioned above, anticholinergic drugs that can cause delirium include antihistamines and some drugs for digestive problems, allergies, and acute asthma attacks. Because there are so many potential culprits, some available over the counter, and because the effects of medications are sometimes addictive, an older person may risk delirium even if he or she is taking each drug at the recommended dose. Medications should be reported even if they haven't caused problems in the past because they might interact with drugs given at the hospital. Make things familiar. Take a few family photos or comforting objects such as a blanket, rosary, or favorite relaxation or soothing music tape. To the hospital, calm conversation about current events or family activities can be reassuring too. Stay close. Family members not only provide comfort, familiarity, and reassurance, they're also more likely than others to recognize when the patient isn't behaving normally or being treated appropriately. If possible, have someone there day and night while the patient is in a state of delirium. Insist on sensory aids. Eyeglasses, hearing aids, and dentures are often put away during a hospital stay, but that can leave the patient disoriented and less able to function. Speak up for their use. Promote activity. If possible, help your loved one get up and walk 2 or 3 times a day. If you can, talk to them in simple language or help them exercise their brains with conversation, crosswords, card games, or other pastimes. Be there for meals. Your companionship and assistance will help a patient eat and drink an adequate amount. And participate in discharge planning. Patients are sometimes sent home or to a nursing or rehabilitation facility while they are still delirious. A patient with delirium can't fully understand discharge instructions, so you'll need to be there to help and to learn about signs that she or he needs to return to the hospital. After a transfer to another facility, make sure nursing staff there understands your loved one's pre-hospitalization level of functioning so that they won't assume that her or his current behavior is typical. Ask for a complete medication review. It might help to discontinue some drugs, such as sedatives, that were added during hospitalization. And now from NPR's WBUR in Boston, Sundowning, Why Hospital Staffs Dread Nightfall and How to Help Seniors Avoid It, by Dr. David Scales. The elderly woman had been normal all day, my colleague told me, tolerating it well when a tube was placed in her bladder to measure her urine. But that evening, she was found wandering the hospital halls yelling in Italian, carrying her urine bag under her arm, thinking it was her purse, traumatized that staff were trying to take it away. Another night in the hospital, a female Sri Lankan colleague saw an elderly man who was convinced she was a Nazi soldier. Reassurances and even a plea from the doctor, "How could I be a Nazi? I have brown skin," could not persuade him otherwise. The next day, the patient was back to normal, incredulous when told about what had transpired the night before. An 80-year-old man, I'll call him Bill, came to our emergency room after a fall. He seemed fine and his tests were negative, but his family wanted him admitted overnight for observation. That evening, he began shouting out, repeatedly wanting to get up and walk to the bathroom, forgetting he'd just been there. Our calming efforts only riled him up more. This erratic nighttime behavior is called sundowning. Staff in hospitals and nursing homes always worry what will happen as twilight approaches. As the sun sets, many elderly patients can change drastically. They can become extremely confused, agitated, not know where they are, and even hallucinate. In other words, they exhibit signs of delirium, a confused state that can lead them to do things they wouldn't otherwise do. Experts agree that confusion and agitation are more common in the evening and at night, but there is surprisingly little scientific consensus on what sundowning actually is. The debate is in how much sundowning and delirium are related. Some experts think they are the same thing, others separate but related entities. It's hard to study sundowning without a clear definition and diagnostic criteria. Experts can't even be sure how often it happens. Why, one recent review found a rate of anywhere from 2 4/10% to 66%. Dr. E.L. Kimchi, a neurologist at Massachusetts General Hospital who studies delirium, says we are still in the early stages of understanding sundowning. There are probably many types of delirium. Delirium after operations, delirium in the intensive care unit, delirium tremens associated with alcohol withdrawal, and some we haven't separated out yet. Sundowning may be another one of them. We do know a few things, though. Elderly people with memory problems are the most likely to sundown, especially those with bad Alzheimer's disease. We know prevention works much better than treatment. Patients in hospitals and nursing homes are particularly prone to becoming agitated in the evening. But being prone to sundowning isn't enough. Something has to tip the balance, like not being able to see or hear well. Other environmental factors can do it too, like being thrust into unfamiliar hospitals with bright fluorescent lights, having sticky heart monitors on your chest, and alarm bells going off at all hours of the night. Dr. Sharon Inouye, Harvard professor and director of the Aging Brain Center at Hebrew Senior Life, also pointed to a dizzying array of barely pronounceable biological factors thought to contribute, including disruptions in circadian rhythms, nadirs in cortisol, stress hormones, sympathomimetic neurotransmitters, melatonin, or fluctuating cytokines. If syllable count is any measure, this is as complicated as it gets. Which is why experts like Inouye and her colleagues developed a series of interventions to address the various factors that contribute to delirium called Hospital Elder Life Program. Many hospitals have similar friendly-sounding protocols. Beth Israel here in Boston uses GRACE, Global Risk Assessment and Care Plan for Elders. And then there's NICHE, Nurses Improving Care for Health System Elders, a nursing protocol found in hospitals around the country. While they haven't been studied specifically for sundowning, they are often used in hospitals to help prevent it. All of these protocols are similar and consist of various ways to keep patients oriented. For instance, keeping hearing aids and glasses within reach, getting patients out of bed, making sure they stay hydrated and well-fed, avoiding medications that cause confusion, managing pain, and reducing noise to allow patients to sleep. It sounds simple and obvious, but these factors are so interrelated that changing one has only a tiny effect. It's the power in the package. HELP is now being used by more than 200 hospitals nationwide and abroad. Still, it's an uphill battle convincing hospitals to invest in more staff to implement these protocols. It's the best thing for the patient and for maintaining quality, Dr. Hollis Day, chief of geriatrics at Boston Medical Center, told me. It's hard to pay for something that doesn't happen. But this is changing. Accountable care organizations are more common, so hospitals will get penalized if patients stay in the hospital too long. The financial implications of increased length of stay is one thing motivating hospitals to try to prevent delirium more systematically, Kim Chi, the MGH neurologist, said. Implementing delirium precautions isn't easy. It requires a change in mindset away from medications to behavioral interventions. Doctors can't always order therapeutic sleep protocols at night or reorientation activities 3 times a day, Inouye said. Giving a sleeping pill is so much quicker than a back rub, herbal tea, and soothing music, but much more hazardous. While hospitals are changing, friends and families can get engaged in the effort as well. Ask what protocols the hospital has in place to detect and minimize sundowning or delirium. There's no data on which is the best, but the important thing is checking that a hospital or nursing home is working to prevent and detect sundowning and delirium. Stay active. Work with doctors, nurses, and physical therapists to understand how your family member can stay active. Encourage them to take care of themselves by showering or brushing their teeth, or walk with them around the room if that's okay with the hospital staff. Dr. Deborah Rosenblum, assistant professor at UMass College of Nursing, researches family involvement in caring for patients with delirium. She acknowledges that many people cannot stay with their relatives all day. They might live hours away or need to work. In those cases, Rosenblum suggests phoning the medical team at admission and then checking in daily. In Bill's case, we tried bed alarms, which made things worse. We tried dimming lights and minimizing noise so he could sleep. His bed was near the nurse's station, but still we worried that he might jump out of bed and fall before someone could reach him. At 11 p.m. one recent night, we called his family and discussed two options: sedate him with medications to keep him from hurting himself, a last resort which might worsen the problem, or send him home. All of the critical tests were negative, so we agreed that the safest thing, despite the late hour, was for him to go back home to familiar people and a familiar environment. I never heard from him again, but I hope the familiarity helped him feel settled. Dr. David Scales, MD, PhD, was a third-year resident in internal medicine at the time of that writing. A very close friend of mine related the distressing situation of her mother's experience with delirium. Her 80-year-old mother had surgery for stenosis. She explained, "When I arrived the next day, she was acting weird and confused, reaching out for things in space, seeing things hanging from the ceiling, letters floating in the air. The following day, she was still loopy at times." My friend's mother required another surgery 3 days later, and that night, assuming problems with anesthesia, was having trouble sleeping. The staff gave her large doses of Benadryl, but she was still restless, pulling out her IVs. My mother was still seeing things and didn't know where she was. I told her she was in the hospital. She thought she was home, that she had to get supper for my dad. She saw pictures that were in our house. I kept telling her she was in the hospital, that she had had an operation. My brother, who had just arrived from California, just humored her and went along with the things that she was saying. That seemed to calm her down. Her brother then called his daughter, an anesthesiologist, who said their mother was sundowning and to get her off of the Benadryl because it was making it much worse. She was released from the hospital after 7 nights, but as my friend said, her mother was never really quite the same. She developed congestive heart failure and passed away 6 years later. Well, whether you call this woman's ordeal delirium or sundowning, it was more pronounced at night, doesn't matter. We know that it is a problem that we are now more able to prevent, identify, and deal with if the occasion arises. And again, how fortunate if none of us ever needs to avail ourselves of this information, yet again, forewarned is forearmed by being prepared if we or a loved one find ourselves hospitalized. Thanks for listening, and until next week, I'm Kathy Van Skoik. You've been listening to Silver Threads, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. The audio producer for the show is Maureen Rich, and I'm Kathy Van Skoik. I hope you will join me again next week for more information and updates for making the best of your silver years. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.